So I'm going to talk about the pathology evaluation of IPF. IPF is a terrible disease because of what it does to the lung. This is a normal lung. For the lung to be functional, we have to have these alveolar spaces that are limited by a very thin wall, and this thin wall, the health of the thin wall is essential to permit a good exchange of gas between the capillaries and the alveolar space. And this is what IPF does to the lung. There is this extensive fibrosis. This is what we call the honeycomb. There is this extensive fibrosis. And now instead of alveolar spaces, we have cysts that are often filled with mucin and lined by a bronchial type of epithelium. And of course, this lung here is a non-function anymore. It doesn't allow any kind of exchange of gas between the alveolar spaces and the capillaries. The IPF mechanism there is based on mainly two main processes. There is a recurrent or persistent injury to the alveolar epithelium and an abnormal response to this injury. So instead of having a regeneration of the epithelial cells normally lining the alveolar spaces, we're going to have an abnormal response consisting of deposition of fibrous tissue. So instead of having regeneration, we're going to have a healing by fibrosis. And this healing by fibrosis, while is characteristic of IPF, is not pathognomonic of it, and it can happen in other conditions, in other lung injuries. Why this is happening, why instead of having a normal regeneration, we're having fibrosis, this is not very well known. It's probably due to both genetic and environmental factors. But having said this, so the presence of fibrosis by itself doesn't make a diagnosis of IPF. And since IPF, the diagnosis of IPF, has such serious implications, making such a diagnosis should rely on very strict criteria. One, to provide an accurate diagnosis, and two, so that patients who would have a chance of being treated for other conditions won't be mislabeled and miss a proper diagnosis. What we're relying on pathology is to make a diagnosis are a set of criteria that have been set by international societies. These international societies group the American, European, Japanese, and South American societies. They met together and they developed these sets of criteria. Now, IPF is not a pathological diagnosis. IPF is a multidisciplinary diagnosis. What we can do on pathology is provide the diagnosis of UIP, usual interstitial pneumonia pattern. The diagnosis of IPF, again, is not a pathological one, is a multidisciplinary one. And the pathological correlate of IPF is UIP. And to make a diagnosis of UIP, we should have these strict criteria, histopathological criteria, and evidence of marked fibrosis, architectural distortion, honeycombing in a predominantly subpleural paraseptal distribution. Like this here, we see the severely distorted architecture, extensive fibrosis. Another criteria is that the involvement should be patchy, meaning we should have normal lung in between affected lung. And also, we have to see fibroblastic foci. And not less important, we have to make sure that there is an absence of features against the diagnosis of UIP. This is here what we call the fibroblastic foci that are very important histological hallmark of UIP. So we have a new fibrous tissue that we usually see at the interface between normal lung and abnormal lung in UIP. So we need these four criteria to make a diagnosis of UIP. If we don't have four criteria, we can make a diagnosis of probable UIP. And if we have less than three criteria, we can make a diagnosis of possible UIP. Again, why are we so careful? It's because, again, there is no pathognomonic features of UIP on pathology, of IPF on pathology. So we have to be very careful what we are labeling these patients so they don't get the wrong diagnosis, the wrong label, and get treated inappropriately. The presence of these histological features precludes the diagnosis of UIP. Hyaline membranes in a context of not pre-existing UIP, because when we have exacerbation of UIP, we could have hyaline membranes, but hyaline membranes by themselves would preclude a diagnosis of UIP. Organizing pneumonia, granulomas, marked interstitial inflammation, away from honeycombing, and the predominantly airway-centered changes would preclude the diagnosis of UIP. So in summary, to make a histological diagnosis of UIP, we should have a lesion displaying both spatial heterogeneity, meaning honeycomb change, fibrosis, and distorted architecture combined with a normal lung, all these in a subpleural or paraseptal predominant location. And also we should have temporal heterogeneity, meaning not all the lesions are at the same age. We're going to have new lesions that are being formed, mainly fibroblastic foci, between the abnormal and normal lung. It's also very useful to classify the patterns of fibrosis for us pathologists. And this is not always easy. So when we are dealing with a fibrotic pattern, a fibrotic process, we should try and classify the pattern of fibrosis. And there are three main patterns. There is the fibrotic NSIP pattern, the airway-centered fibrosis, and the UIP pattern. In the NSIP, what is characteristic is the diffuse and homogeneous pattern of fibrosis, unlike UIP, which is heterogeneous. In the airway-centered one, the predominant lesion is mainly centered around the airways. And UIP, we've reviewed it. Why it's important? Because again, once we can classify these patterns of fibrosis, we can come up with a differential diagnosis. The UIP pattern, while highly suggestive of IPF, is not pathognomonic of it. A UIP pattern can also be seen in connective tissue disease, in chronic hypersensitivity pneumonitis, and also in pneumoconiosis. The fibrotic pattern of NSIP, it is mainly seen in connective tissue disease, and then in other conditions like chronic hypersensitivity pneumonitis, in drug reaction, in infection, healing acute lung injury, smoking-related lesions, and it could be idiopathic. And this is the pattern of NSIP that is characterized by this homogeneous and uniform involvement of the interstitium. And then airway-centered pattern, the differential diagnosis of it is chronic first, and most likely it's going to be chronic hypersensitivity pneumonitis, but it can also be seen in chronic aspiration, in some drug reaction, in connective tissue disease, and in smoking-related injuries. So classifying these patterns of fibrosis could help orient the differential diagnosis with what is the most likely one and what would be other possibilities. This is the pattern of an airway-centered fibrosis, where most of the fibrosis is centered around the airway. Unlike the UIP that would mainly affect the subpleural regions. This is a patient presenting with a UIP pattern. Having this without any clinical information or without submitting the entire material and looking carefully, we could make a diagnosis of UIP pattern and then suggest IPF. But then if you look carefully and make multiple sections, we could recognize adjacent to the typical UIP pattern a granulomatous lesion. A granuloma being a collection of histiocytes, sometimes with giant cells. And this finding here points to the likelihood diagnosis being chronic hypersensitivity pneumonitis. Also, this is a patient with UIP pattern, and then clinical correlation, clinical history are essential to make aware the pathologist that this UIP pattern is not diagnostic of IPF, but that this patient has rheumatoid arthritis. Of course, we can recognize like some features that would point that it is not, you know, the usual pattern of UIP. We have here prominent lymphoid aggregates in this this lesion, but clinical information here are essential to arrive to the correct diagnosis. So how do we make a diagnosis of IPF? Following the guidelines of these international societies, this is an algorithmic approach for making diagnosis of IPF. And we see here that the surgical biopsy is not at the center of it. The surgical biopsy should come within a comprehensive clinical radiological approach. So when we have a suspected IPF, we should clinically say, is there an identifiable cause of ILD? If we can identify a cause, most likely this is not IPF. Then comes the role of high-resolution CT. High-resolution CT can make a diagnosis of UIP and then of IPF. If it is diagnostic, there is no need for a biopsy. If the findings on the CT scan are inconsistent or suggestive of UIP, then we can consider a surgical biopsy. The surgical biopsy could rule in or rule out UIP. If it rules it in, still, it's not to the pathologist to make a diagnosis of IPF. The pathologist would say, ideally, this is UIP, and then in the context of a multidisciplinary discussion, the diagnosis of IPF would be established. And this is, again, following the recommendation of these international societies, combining the findings on CT and the finding on the surgical lung biopsy would make the diagnosis of IPF. Now, if there is a need to do a surgical biopsy, this is an invasive procedure, and I think once we make this decision, we have to benefit to the maximum of it. In most cases, transbronchial biopsies are completely inadequate to the diagnosis of UIP. So we should make these open lung biopsies. And the surgeon who is making these biopsies should be experienced with these cases. He should obtain samples from multiple sites. Since we're doing the procedure, we should not be shy, like take one biopsy, a small edge from the lung, and that's it. Let's take biopsies from multiple sites, preferably from the upper and lower lobes, and we should obtain samples from areas with greater and lesser involvement, because sometimes the surgeon would go in and he would recognize a diseased lung. He would take the part that is mostly affected. And sometimes this is just complete end-stage lung that would not be diagnostic. It's also important to realize that lung biopsies can be highly specific in some conditions, like sarcoidosis, lymphangiomyomatosis, eosinophilic pneumonia, Langerhans cell histiocytosis, and pulmonary alveolar proteinosis. While in other conditions, by themselves, they are not specific, like in UIP, DIP, and SIP, and here the clinical and radiological correlation are essential for a proper diagnosis. So again, I'd like to emphasize that the diagnosis of IPF is not a pathological one. It is a multidisciplinary one, and the role of the pathologist, the role of the surgical biopsy should be well considered and well placed in a proper algorithmic approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Nasir, for this very comprehensive talk. The floor is open for questions.
The Graves biopsy nowadays in the international conferences, and I don't know if you have a personal impact on this or a personal experience with this. I mean, it is bigger than the transbronchial. Would it substitute the surgical biopsy or not?
Personally, and here I haven't seen any cryobiopsy, but in the last meeting I attended in March, and they were the largest series has come from the Mayo Clinic, and according to them, cryobiopsies are as good as open surgical lung biopsies to make a diagnosis of interstitial lung disease. I don't know if anybody is performing cryobiopsies in here.